Welcome to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues, a weekly program discussing issues of concern to the family and those who hold traditional family values in Pennsylvania and our nation. Archives of these programs can be heard at www.afafpa.org. And now, your host, Diane Gramley, State Director of American Family Association of Pennsylvania.
There is no doubt that election fever is in the air. You can't watch television, listen to the news, or read the paper without seeing a political ad or reading of some candidate for some race or the other. But are Americans engaged, or are they frustrated because they don't know how to get involved? They don't have the tools to even know where to begin. The political parties tell you to back their endorsed candidates. They tell you don't ask any questions because, quote, we know more than you do, unquote. This disenfranchises voters and has led to the increased apathy that we see. Because there appears to be no difference between the two political parties, but yet the grassroots people know that there's something wrong with the system and that there are people who agree with them when it comes to their views. Now, if someone had the tools to seek out like-minded individuals or to organize a precinct, could that make a difference in not only this election this year, but in the future to change the entire political scene in America? My guest today will provide you with the tools and the information that you need to do just that. Warren Estrom is with the Voices of America, and he is my guest today. Thanks, Warren, for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Give us a little bit of background. And I've had you on the program before, and I've been to a couple of your presentations, yours and Peter's. But give us some background for those of our listeners who don't know how you guys got started.
Okay. Well, there was a group of, back in 2009, there was a group of Tea Party leaders in Ohio that were at a meeting in Columbus. And a gentleman was sitting next to me. He was a German immigrant. He came over when he was 10 years old. His family came over from Germany. And basically, we were talking about rallies and all of this kind of good stuff, and he looked at me and he said to me, he says, well, you know, what do you do after the rallies are over with? You know, you got to do something. How do we affect change? And I told him, I said, the only way you can really affect change in the United States is to be able to elect candidates of your choice. And he said, well, how do we do that? And I said, well, you know, you have to start at the precinct level and organize your precinct. Tip O'Neill told Ronald Reagan, all politics are local, and it's very true.
Right.
Everything starts at the local level. It has to build its way up. You can't start a party, if you're going to start a party, from the top down like Anderson tried it and Perot tried it, you know, because you have to start at the bottom and go up. So we started researching, primarily Pete started doing a lot of research on how do you organize a precinct. Over a period of time, we came up with the Voices of America, which is an organization, it's actually two guys in a website.
I like it when you say that, as if that's so inconsequential. When folks go to your website, they see like, wow. But go ahead.
Right now, the website is over time has really expanded out into a lot of different areas. It's not only precinct organizing now, it's how to do a candidate night, how to distribute voter guides, our votes, you know, how to use a political software to enhance your capabilities, and these kind of things. Where it's being used, it's being very successful. We have a gentleman up in Portage County, up in the northeastern part of Ohio, that lives in a heavily Democratic area. They were backing 13 candidates in the 2010 election, and they did precinct organizing, and they went to do a lot of door-to-door stuff. They had 2,100 volunteers, and they won 11 of their 13 elections in a county that was over 60% Democratic.
Okay, you're saying that they had 13 conservative candidates. I'm assuming Republican candidates.
Yes.
And just last year, because they organized their precinct and they had volunteers, I'm assuming going door-to-door, they won 11 of those 13 in a heavily Democratic county?
Yes, they did.
Wow.
It's got a lot to do with education, number one.
Mm-hmm.
Educating the voters on what the people that are running actually believe.
Right, okay.
And number two, being able to get out the vote.
Yeah. So you educate on where the candidates stand, and then you encourage those educated voters to get out and actually vote. You don't endorse candidates. You don't say, vote for this person or that person. You just tell them their positions on issues.
We did a candidate night voter guide type of thing in Ohio 18 in the Ohio 18th District for the Federal House of Representatives. And we found that if you stay nonpartisan, get the information out of what these candidates believe, normally the people will vote conservative.
The right way.
Because a lot of people vote the D and the R, and some of those people that are just chronic voters for the party and not actually for the candidate and what the candidate believes, they're going to vote DRR anyway, no matter who runs.
Right.
Because that's the easy way out. They just say, I voted, but they don't really know who they voted for. All they know is they voted for the party.
It's the lazy person's way, yes. You don't have to take any effort to find out who believes what.
Mm-hmm. And increasingly, that's difficult, too, because to begin with, the parties don't want you to know where the candidates stand. Really stand on issues. I mean, they will just want to whitewash everything and just to tell all good things about their candidates. And people are frustrated with that because through all that, they become discouraged and they don't follow the politics at all. They don't follow voting records. But it's difficult for one individual, for a concerned citizen, or even a small concerned group of citizens to keep up with the way a candidate votes on issues. So you're saying candidate nights, and then you invite the candidates in, all the candidates who are running for that particular race.
Yes.
Set that up. You know, have candidates nights, and the candidates are sitting at the table. And what if some don't show up? And how do you come up with the questions and such?
I'll give you the example on the Highway 18 because it worked very well.
Okay.
We invited both the Democrats and the Republicans in the primaries before the general election.
Mm-hmm.
We had one Democratic candidate that didn't get enough signatures to get on the ballot, and the incumbent would not come.
Would not
he
come.
Said, no, he said, I'll come to the debates in the general election, but I won't do the primary. We had six Republicans running in the primary, which was rather cumbersome because there were so many people running.
Right. Okay, the incumbent was a Republican.
The incumbent was a Democrat.
Oh, was a Democrat. Okay. So he was not concerned because he figured he could just wipe out any Republicans who won the primary. That was his mindset, I'm assuming. He could take on any Republican that won in the primary. Okay.
In the polling, he was ahead, so he wasn't concerned.
Yeah.
So we set up the first candidate night, and we have rules, and these are all on the website. We basically said what we're going to do is we're going to have an open forum debate where the people in the audience ask the questions. And because that's kind of brutal for a candidate, because most candidate nights are staged by an organization that's sympathetic to one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Republican Women's Club will put it on, and the Democrats, and all this kind of stuff.
Right.
And a lot of times they get the questions 2 weeks ahead of time, so they have a lot of time to answer.
Right.
But these things are rather brutal when the people are asking, because you have to be able to think on your feet, and if you're an incumbent, you have a record to run on, which is extra brutal, because you have to defend your record.
That. Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. So what we did is we had the first candidate night. We had six people on the stage. We were handing out 3x5 cards, and I said, you know, I want your name on the card, not the question, because I don't...
Decipher high
Right. Yeah. I did that once in a small candidate night and found out that half of the cards I couldn't read.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so that's what we did, and it worked real well. And I would just call a name, and they would have 30 seconds to ask the question. And after that, the candidate would have 2 minutes to answer the question.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a timekeeper sitting down front with a little thing that said, you got 1 minute, and then your time's up. So when we started that evening, I had six cards sitting on the podium. And I'm thinking, we got 3 hours. And I'm getting really concerned because this is the first major federal office candidate.
So only six people in the audience had handed in cards expressing their interest in asking a question.
Yes.
At the beginning, okay.
Yes. And I thought, uh-oh, we're going to have a problem here. Yeah. It was really fascinating, the dynamics of what happened. As soon as somebody asked the first question and these people started giving answers, it generated a lot of other interest and generated a lot of other questions.
Okay.
At the end of the night, we were 3 hours into this thing, and I had 15 cards on my table.
Wow.
This was after 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody was totally engaged in this.
Yeah.
And it was obviously not staged, and it was obviously being done...
In a fair manner.
In a fair manner, right. And everybody got a chance to ask the question they wanted to ask, and nobody was going to say, well, you can't ask that question or anything like that. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, and that's one thing that's lacking in most of these debates that you see, or even candidate nights. Too many times, the audience is just passive observers. They don't get a chance to participate because, as you're saying, too many times it's staged.
That, or some people make the mistake in a candidate night by having predetermined questions where the audience doesn't participate.
Okay.
Because you have to have the people in the audience participate in these things. That's the best way to make these things successful.
And that information that they gather that night sticks with them much longer than if they're sitting there passively listening to candidates respond to.
At the end of the 3 hours, I said, I've still got 15 cards up here. Do you want to go on? We had around 250 to 300 people in the audience, and only two people left.
Wow. After 3 hours, they've been sitting there.
Yes. I thought people would be leaving before the 3 hours, and we went that long, and only two people left. I was flabbergasted.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, yeah, this is really cool, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. But that shows the hunger. The voters want to know where candidates stand on issues.
Yes.
And to provide them the opportunity to actually ask the questions and to actually hear from candidates' own mouth their response to audiences' questions, that completely changes the dynamics.
It does. It really does. at the end of the night, we went 3 hours and 45 minutes. At the end of the night, everybody got their questions asked. The candidates, quite frankly, were exhausted.
I can imagine.
Like I said, that's grueling.
Yeah.
It is really grueling to be able to have people just ask you out of the blue questions. Mm-hmm. You have to come up with an answer for it.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And what we did in these candidate nights is we had people take a card when they came in, and on the back of the card it said, did you change your mind about who you were going to vote for because of this event? 42% of the people that went out said that they changed their mind about who they were going to vote for because of this event.
Wow.
Now, that's saying something. Because these people had preconceived notions of who they were going to vote for, and after all these candidates answering all these questions, they changed their mind
because of the effectiveness of the candidates night and the way that the whole thing was set up.
Yes.
That's fantastic. And just out of curiosity, how long did it take you to set that up? Like from when the concept first was born to the actual candidate night, about how long did that take?
There were 6 or 8 Tea Party groups throughout the district. Our district covered, I think it was 18 counties.
Wow.
And so we had 6 to 8 Tea Party groups that were actually coordinating in their area.
Mm-hmm.
It took a while because we had not done this before, and it took us a while to learn how to do it. For instance, we sent out invitations to the candidates through email.
Okay.
We didn't get very much response.
Right.
So then we started calling, and we were getting excuses.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we got some, but some didn't want to respond to it. Then we figured out we need to send certified return receipt letters out so that they can't say, I didn't get it.
Right.
So we had proof that they had received it. When we did that, everybody came.
Yeah. Now, that one candidate, the incumbent who decided not to come, did you just let the audience know that he'd been invited but turned
him
down? Okay.
Yes, we did. And in the general election, when we had the candidate nights of the general election, he refused to come then also.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yes.
So he did not want to face the voters is how I would interpret that, and I would hope that the voters interpreted that the same way.
Yes, that's the way we interpreted it because he said he was going to, and we had an email from him saying he was going to, and then he refused to.
Okay, so you actually had a paper trail. You had documentation saying that he would come to a general election.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So what we did then was, after the candidate nights in the general election, which we only had 2 at that point in time, we had a constitutional candidate and a Republican candidate.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of fascinating because the constitutional candidate answered all the questions based on Constitution, and the Republican candidate based the answers to his questions on the Republican
platform
as opposed to the Democratic platform. There was a huge difference between the responses in the audience. And I'll give you an example. The first question up was, what are you going to do about the economy if you get elected? You know, how are you going to save money?
Mm-hmm.
And the Republican candidate gave the standard Republican answer, you know, about cutting back on all the Democrat spending.
Yeah.
And it went to the constitutional candidate, and the constitutional candidate says, well, he said, the first thing I'm going to do is get rid of a lot of unconstitutional federal programs. Like he said, for instance, he said the Energy Department.
Mm.
He said the Energy Department was created in the 70s to get us off of dependence on foreign oil. He said we were 30% dependent then, we're 70% now.
Wow.
And he slams his fist down on the table and says, get rid of them, and everybody in the place is on their feet. Cheering. All of a sudden, my head snapped around. And I thought, wow, that was kind of interesting. Well, I'm on the platform next to the guys that are on the table, and I can see them from the side.
Mm-hmm. Probably see them sweating, yeah.
The Republican candidate was physically nervous.
Mm.
He didn't like the response this guy was getting.
Mm-hmm.
And before the event, I talked to him in the parking lot. He said something to me about he wasn't worried about this guy because he didn't have any campaign, it didn't have any volunteers, and didn't have any money, you know.
He had the message that the voters wanted to hear, though.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the second question up was, what about Afghanistan and Iraq?
Mm-hmm.
And obviously the Republican gave the standard Republican answer, and it came to him, and this guy was a retired Air Force man. And he said, well, I'm all for, you know, if somebody messes with us, we go there and we kick their butt, and we come home.
Right.
And he said, the problem is, he said, we haven't had a war that was declared since the Second World War.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, every one that we've fought since then has either been a stalemate or a loss.
Or a loss, yeah.
And he said, if the American people aren't behind it, we shouldn't be there.
Yeah.
People are on their feet again.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking, this is fascinating.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I didn't realize what happened until the next morning. And it dawned on me, if you took a horizontal line on a graph and put the horizontal line as the Constitution,
mm-hmm.
and a vertical line, and the left side was leftist and the right side was right,
mm-hmm.
the Republican and the Democrat are both below the constitutional line. You know, the Republican is a little closer to the center than the Democrat is.
Right.
But they're both
below the line, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and this conservative constitutionalist was above the line on the upper right-hand side, and they were both together below the line down toward the lower left-hand corner.
Left-hand. Wow.
As long as there's Republicans and Democrats debating each other, it's not a whole lot of difference. But when you bounce either one of them against the Constitution.
There's a big difference.
There's a huge difference. And that was the dynamics of it.
Yeah. Oh, that's quite evident when the constitutional candidate is responding, looking at the Constitution for this guideline. Mm-hmm. And when he can look down there and say that this, like the Department of Energy, and I would assume he brought up the Department of Education also as something that should be eliminated because they are unconstitutional.
Right.
And sapping our budget, sinking so much money into it, we see so much interference. And I'm thinking of the Education Department, especially at this point in time when the Obama administration has used that department to further his agenda. But it is interesting what you're saying when you put the two major parties, the Democrat and Republican candidates, together during a debate. A lot of times it is one, if it's a Democrat responding, they're blaming the Republican. If the Republican's responding, they're blaming the Democrat. You know, their policies, and they're just blaming the parties, appearing to not really seek an answer to the nation's problems.
Right.
So as you're looking at what you guys do, you know, you're talking about educating the voters, and candidate nights is one of the ways in which voters can be educated, because they actually get to ask questions as audience members get to ask questions. But through all that, how do you find like-minded people? How do you get out the vote? How would you go from the candidate night and then the next step being actually getting out the vote?
Well, there's two ways. I'll briefly go over a voter guide. We put out the voter guides for the Ohio 18, and where the incumbent Democrat didn't answer our voter guide either. We put down on the voter guide that he refused to answer the people's questions after every question in the voter guide.
I'm going to throw this out real quick, because sometimes we put together a nonpartisan voter guide, and if I don't get a response, and if it's an incumbent, I go look for their voting record to see if it's a response. Or is it more effective just to say they did not respond? Or to do the digging yourself and look at their record? I'm just curious for my own benefit.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people, if they don't return the voter guide, they just don't put anything down there. And there's two things you can put down. Number one, if they refuse to answer, you put down that they didn't answer it.
Okay.
Answer the voter guide. The other way is if they do answer it and their voting record doesn't match how they answered it.
Okay.
Then you put a big red asterisk next to it, and on the bottom you put the fact that their voting record doesn't match their answer.
Doesn't match that. Okay.
Which basically says they're lying.
Right, exactly.
So you put them in an untenable position because they either are tagged as refusing to talk, you know, answer the people's questions, mm-hmm. or they lie.
Right.
Neither one of these are good.
That's true.
Now, when we put out 70,000 voter guides, and we actually put them in the newspapers, in the Sunday edition of the newspapers, and that was 2 days before the election because we knew if we did it that close to the election, nobody would have time to react to anything we put out and deny, you know, anything.
Mm-hmm.
The incumbent lost by 19 points 2 days before the election. He was supposed to win by two.
Wow.
So that was a 21-point swing. I'd like to think that we had something to do with that.
I think you could say that without a doubt, that you definitely had something to do with that outcome.
Yeah.
So do you have folks going out knocking on doors and such? Say, if someone wanted to organize their precinct, explain some of the tools that you have on the website itself.
Okay. There's information on the website on how to go door-to-door, what to say. There's sample questions. There's information on the website as far as who to target demographically. You don't target people that, say, Republicans or Democrats that vote all the time. You don't target them.
Okay.
Because they're already going to vote the way they've already decided to vote anyway.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There's the sometimes vote Republican that you'll target. There's the sometimes vote independent that you'll target.
Okay.
And the always votes independent, you know, you'll target those folks too because you don't know which way they're going to vote anyway.
Okay.
So if you only target those three demographics, then you have a pretty good chance of changing minds, educating people, and getting out the vote.
Okay. Yeah, you guys, you were here actually last month, and there was an interesting statistic that either you or Peter gave as far as the number of Americans who identify or lean towards conservatism.
Yes, the number of liberals actually, and I think the statistic is 21% of the voting public are liberal, and the rest is either moderate or conservative. And I think the conservative figure, if I'm not mistaken, the conservative figure was in the high 40s. So the conservatives far outnumber either the moderates and especially the liberals, because there's more moderates than there are liberals.
Mm-hmm.
I know in the state of Ohio now, the last figure I heard was that 52 to 55% of the voters in Ohio are non-committed. In other words, they're not registered with either political party.
Not registered? Oh, my goodness. Wow.
I mean, they're registered to vote, but they're not committed to a party.
Okay, they're independent. Okay, they're not, I got you. They're not actually affiliated with a particular party.
That's correct.
Okay.
And that number seems to be climbing every year because right. 2 years ago it was in the Ohio, 2 years ago it was 50%, and now it's 52%.
Well, it's a frustration the way that the parties, both parties, it's all top down, and they're completely squelching the grassroots, and attempting to squelch the grassroots say on anything, especially when they, like here in Pennsylvania on the 28th, actually the day you guys were in, well, you guys were in the week before that, but the 28th of January, our Republican, state Republican Party endorsed candidates, and they shouldn't be doing that. To me, the primary process is for the voters to decide who they want the nominees to be for whatever race.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that's not happening here in Pennsylvania.
I saw an email that said that in Pennsylvania, that when they were having endorsing the candidates and stuff like that, that they actually tried to throw out some Tea Party people out of the convention.
I know those Tea Party people they tried to throw out. Absolutely, yeah, I know them. They're from Bucks County, yeah. they did, but it was perfect as far as exposing the state Republican Party for their tactics.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an increased effort to stop the endorsement process from the grassroots. And this year, the numbers were even higher for not endorsing, although it was still not the majority, but still the number keeps growing each year for not endorsing. So what's your website and how can folks contact you guys?
Okay, the website is voicesofamerica.org.
Okay.
And there's email addresses there for both Peter and I.
Okay.
And I'll give you my cell phone number if somebody wants to call me on the cell phone.
Okay.
The number is 330-231-4312.
Okay, 330-231-4312. And,
you
know, probably when folks are thinking about this, their first question is going to be, how much do you charge?
We don't charge anything. We ask a collection be taken up to cover our expenses.
Okay.
We don't ask to stay in fancy hotels. We're looking for a clean bed to sleep in, and we'll eat at McDonald's. You know, we're pretty cheap dates.
So you just ask that your expenses be covered?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Of course, it's always nice when a few extra bucks are thrown in there, too. But, you know, we appreciate that because a lot of times big organizations, they have a big price tag to the presentations that they bring and such. So appreciate your all's dedication to this because it's evident just the fact that you just ask that your expenses be covered. I mean, that in itself shows your dedication to actually getting America back on course.
Our take on this is people shouldn't be making a lot of money off of this. I mean, if you're a political consultant and, you know, your fees are out there, that's fine because most political consultants work for the party, not for the candidate.
True.
And if you want to do that, fine. But we believe that people in the Patriot Movement shouldn't be charging for doing this stuff because we've got a country safe, and we believe that we shouldn't be making profits and trying to make a living off of this.
Yeah, we appreciate that. Again, appreciate your dedication. So, again, the website is thevoicesofamerica.org, and Warren's cell phone number, if you're interested in contacting him about having him and Peter come in, is 330-231-4312. And you take care, and we really appreciate all the information that you have.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Okay, take care. Okay.
Thank you.
You have been listening to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues. If you would like to get involved in defending traditional values in Pennsylvania, please contact the AFAFPA at Post Office Box 1048, Franklin, 16323, or visit their website at afafpa.org. The views expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect the views of American Family Radio, Lighthouse Ministries of Franklin, AFA, and AFAFPA.